Well, hello there, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Money and Change. My name is Ira Robinson, and as always, we are here with Stu Scheer. Hello, Stu.
Hey, Ira. How's the weather up in Fort Wayne?
Not too bad today, although we've been getting that intermittent spitting rain. It's one of those lovely days.
and we've got nothing but partly cloudy skies and an air show going on in Dayton, Ohio.
I love air shows. They're awesome.
Well, they are. And not too far from me, we have a plane that likes to practice during the week. It's one of the aerobatic guys comes in about 3 or 4 days prior to the show, and he buzzes all over town and does all kinds of crazy stuff. And that's kind of interesting. But anyhow, you know, we've got a show to do today, and we've got a bunch of things to cover. So let's get on with the shout-outs here. A big shout-out to WCET-FM 101.7 in Columbia, South Carolina. And they've been covering the show now for a while, and a big shout-out to them for doing that. And if you're in the Columbia area, you can listen to Columbia Talk, and that's FM 101.7. Also, a big shout-out to the University of Findlay, and you can see their website at www.findlay.edu. And I just found out this week that the University of Findlay has been placed in one of the top 20 the 20th football teams in the country for Division II. And so we'll see what happens there this fall. They have very good sports programs. So if your son or daughter wants to go to a good school, and it's kind of conservative, but it's a good school, and go to University of Findlay and check them out on the website, www.findlay.edu. Also, a big shout out to Rusty Ducks Custom Pens on Facebook. And Phil at Rusty Ducks Custom Pens is doing an awesome job. He's got a lot of pens to do, and that keeps him busy. Also, he had on Facebook, he showed his pizza cutter handle that he made. Beautiful. I mean, he really makes some really beautiful stuff. So you want to check him out on Facebook. Also, a big shout out to Show Us, Don't Tell Us, and that's Skills Mike and Papa Bear, and they are on from 7 to 9 on what day?
On Saturdays, 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Yep.
Check them out. They're prime time. Also, big shout out to Scott and Susie Phillips at the American Wood Shop. And I believe they're on their way back from Greece. And they were over checking out different kinds of olive wood to use in different projects. Also having a little bit of a vacation. Also, a big shout out to somebody who works at Open Eyes Network.
That would be Joe, right? That would be Joe, right?
Well, there's Joe and there's Ira.
Yep, indeed. And you guys can find all the archives of all the shows that I do, including Money and Change, Open Eyes, Brothers at Arms, the Positude Podcast, Adventures in Autism, and Duct Tape Nation over at OpenEyesNetwork.com.
Hey, that was a mouthful.
It was indeed.
Can you do that with popcorn in your mouth?
Not often.
Oh, okay. All right, check him out at Open Eyes Network. Also, a big shout-out to Michael Vera at L&M Radio Network. And Michael has a lot of shows. We've been on that network for quite a while. And you want to check out the chat room. You have to check out the chat room. A whole bunch of good people are in there. And so you want to check out L&M Radio Network for their shows, too. Also, aren't we carried in New Jersey? I believe there's a radio station in northern New Jersey that's carrying us now.
High Point Radio, they spread us out to New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. It's a really nice station up there. They run all the shows on the network, and we really appreciate having them as one of our affiliates.
Do I have to start speaking Pennsylvania Dutch? Or do I have to do the show with a Joycey accent? I don't know. It's kind of neat how much we have expanded over the last, 5 years? I mean, we're really expanding. We've got a lot of stations on the East Coast. We've got, of course, Open Eyes Network here in the Midwest. And, of course, Michael Vera's L&M Radio Network. So you want to check us out on those. And, of course, we're replayed at different times in the day, depending on the radio station. So you want to check out their websites. Also, you know, before we do a show, we always do a disclaimer. We have to do that. And the information contained in this presented material is from the posting of news agencies on the internet and are not necessarily the views or opinions of the owners of this program. We are not responsible for and expressly disclaim all liability for damages of any kind arising out of use, reference to, or reliance on any information contained in this broadcast. The information provided is not offered as financial advice, financial planning, or for investment purposes, so you want to use this information at your own risk. And by the way, if you want to check up on money and change, we do have a website, and it's called moneyandchange.weebly.com. That's moneyandchange.weebly.com. We've got a lot of information there. We've got a lot of videos there. Ton of information right at your hands. And we not only cover banks and finance and different things like that, we also talk about preparedness. We talk about planning ahead. We talk about a lot of different things. I mean, a ton of different things. What to do after a disaster. All kinds of things. We even have a humor section all the way at the back. It's called the Wrinkle City Gazette, so you want to check that out. And there's a new Gazette posted every month, and June is up this month, and hopefully within another week, the July version will be out. Well, from the currency chart at XE.com, the euro has gained a penny against the U.S. dollar. It's up to $1.16 from $1.15. The Great British Pound stayed the same at $1.32. The Australian dollar stayed at 74 cents. The Canadian dollar dropped a penny. It's now at 75 cents to the U.S. dollar. The Swiss franc gained a penny. It's at $1.01. Japanese yen stayed the same at 9 tenths of a cent. And the Chinese yuan, wow, it dropped. And it's when you look at the dropping of it, you know, last week it was like 15.6 cents to the dollar. It dropped down to 15.3 cents to the dollar. You say, well, that's not much. But when you're talking billions of dollars, it is. And it can be a lot of money. And the strength of the dollar is showing. And, you know, when you have a strong dollar, you don't sell as much. And when you have a little bit weaker dollar, then you sell more on the international market. So that's something to watch here in the next couple of weeks. And if the Chinese yuan goes down to 15 cents even, that means the dollar is a lot stronger and their economy has some problems.
You know, Stu, some people have asked as far as that goes, and I think it'd be a great place to ask it here. Do you think that that strengthening of the dollar is related to some of the tariff work that Donald Trump has been implementing?
It can be. Usually tariff wars are detrimental because what happens is the other country reciprocates with a higher tariff on your goods and then you don't sell that much. And China buys a lot of U.S. grain. And with the price of grain going up, then they have to get it from someplace else. And there's a lot of problems there. And there are a lot of products that we buy from China, which is going to increase the cost. I think the big goal that President Trump is trying to do is to say to all the other countries, hey, let's sit down and let's negotiate a one-for-one or as close as we can in trade.
See, I think that too, because one of the things that I noticed with it is that, you know, people are calling for fair trade, fair trade, fair trade. And yeah, that's fine. So let's raise our own tariffs because so far they've been the ones really taking advantage of us over the past years.
Well, that's right. And, you know.
So he's just bringing it more into parity as to what it should be.
Right, right. A fair trade. And, you know, sometimes goods and services coming into the country need to be taxed. Maybe 1% or maybe up to maybe 2 or 3, 4 or 5%, but not 20. You know, you're going to have to check goods in at the ports of entry and to make sure that the cargo lading is correct as to what's coming in. And so if you're getting automobile parts and you open up the container and there happens to be guns in there, hey, we have a problem. And so you need inspectors to check all that out to make sure what's coming in the country is allowed within the country. And that costs a little money. So, you know, maybe a 1 or 2% tariff on goods coming in the country, I wouldn't have any problem with that. And I don't think other countries will. But trade wars always cause problems.
They
but
do, yeah.
I think they're going to sit down and talk about this. And I think it's going to be one of those things that, hey, we'll get with Canada, we'll get with Mexico and say, look, guys, let's be fair about this whole thing.
And I do think honestly, people are making a bigger deal out of it than it actually is. You know, I've seen so many people actually almost crying apocalypse sort of situation when he raised the tariffs on it. And I'm like, whoa, 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 wait a minute, guys, chill out a little bit. It's not that bad. Okay.
Not that bad yet. But then you can take a look at history, and there were a lot of trade wars prior to World War II. And so, you know, you got to wonder what's going on here. So, you know, always be prepared for any type of an event.
That's it. Exactly. Yes. Yes.
And that's all we're trying to say on the show is, yeah, there are problems out there with banks. There are problems out there with trade wars and so forth. But what are you doing to prepare just in case something happens?
Just in case things go sideways. Yeah. I mean, and that's what I've always been about too. I mean, because you always want to prepare for the worst and hope for the best, right? I mean, if you've got the stuff on hand, then if something happens, you don't have to worry about it as much. It's going to be okay. You know,
that's right. That's right. And do you have enough money put away to pay your bills for at least a year? Nobody in the United States has that. If the bank shut down tomorrow, which I hope they don't, but let's just say they do. Do you have enough money to pay your bills for the rest of the year on hand? How much money do you owe on credit cards? You know, we've been talking to people, hey, pay down your debt, put some money aside, get some long-term food, be able to store water and preserve water, you know?
As far as paying off your debt goes, I mean, remember, if you have $20 in your pocket and no debt over your head, such as a mortgage, car payment, so on and so forth, you're actually wealthier than 80% of the rest of America. I mean, it's a sad statement, but it really is the truth.
Yeah. There are a lot of people that are in debt, and you want to be able to pay off your debt. And if you haven't started now, hey, a little bit every week out of your pay starts. And, you know, you could do some preparedness by going to places like Aldi's to get food, or you get long-term freeze-dried foods if you want through Thrive Life or BePrepared.com, Emergency Essentials. There are a lot of others, Legacy Foods. But make sure that you have something to at least cover you 6 months, at least. And, you know, with interest rates that are out there right now, why leave money in a savings account? I would find another way to do it. And, you know, when you take a look at Ethereum, for example, Bitcoin, people go, oh, I have to get some. I have to get some. I'll tell you what. You know, Bitcoin used to be $9,918, and that was like maybe 6-7 weeks ago. And now it's only $6,130. It's too volatile. Ethereum was $758.73 6-7 weeks ago. It's down to $473. Do you want to invest in something that you can't see, that you need a virtual wallet to put it in, that's electronic, that can be hacked? I don't think so. And then you take a look at gold. You know, gold right now, hey, there was a drop. Last week it was $1,302.81. I think the strength of the dollar brought it down to $1,269.83. It's down because the value is up for the dollar. Silver, it's down to $16.46 from $17.19. So if you have enough to buy gold, hey, people say buy gold. Get the 10-ounce coins. that's fine. You're not paying as much, you know, than you are for a whole ounce. A tenth ounce works. It would be probably $150 a coin. And you can use that to barter and trade with. Silver, hey, that's the poor man's gold. Find a good legitimate source. I don't care if it's APMEX, silver.com, Kitco. There are a bunch of others. Just do not buy the paper certificates. Those are absolutely worthless in a crisis. You can't do any. Well, yeah, you can do something. You can start a fire, or you could use it for toilet paper if you want. But certificates aren't good. They've been oversold and oversold and oversold, and the supply of gold and silver is somewhat finite. Platinum, you know, platinum took a tumble. Last week it was $907.05. It's down to $874.85. Palladium took a little bit of a tumble. It's down to $955.89. And that's the currency chart as it stands at XE.com. Now, how about Germany repatriating 583 tons of gold? This came out of the Gold Telegraph. Tom Lewis wrote the story. They said, before declaring bankruptcy, Lehman Brothers had $639 billion in assets. It was thought to be too big to fail. Yeah, right. Currently, Deutsche Bank has almost tripled those assets at $1.7 trillion, but its future is in question. The bank's net income plummeted by 80% from its 2017 level. And the Federal Reserve has labeled Deutsche Bank's U.S. operation as troubled, and that might be an understatement, according to the article. And the growing problems at Deutsche Bank, combined with unprecedented global debts, could spell economic and financial chaos. Deutsche Bank is one of the major banks in trouble. Others are nipping at its heels. And like we used to talk about in the show earlier, was Deutsche Bank is at the center of all of the financial networks in Europe. If Deutsche Bank fails, everybody fails. Or maybe nearly everybody fails. But you want to check that out. Deutsche Bank is in trouble. They've laid off 7,000 employees, and out of the 7,000 employees, they're closing branches. And in closing branches, they have other problems, and, you know, you have to watch that. They were even looking to possibly merge with Commerce Bank, C-O-M-M-E-R-Z, which is the second largest bank in Germany. Is that going to help them, or is that going to cause problems for both banks? Who knows? But when, you know, Deutsche Bank stocks crashed, the S&P, which is Standard & Poor's, downgraded the bank from an A- to a triple B plus, a rating not far from junk. And one of the problems cited by S&P was too unstable and shifting leadership and generally poor performance of the bank. Well, Deutsche Bank, according to the report, is far from acknowledging any problems, and its new CEO, Suing, S-E-W-I-N-G, spoke to his staff after the rating downgrade and reassured them that the bank's inherent strength and future strategies are there. Following his speech, Deutsche Bank was forced to report a drop in revenues of 5% and a decrease of income of 79%. Was he a little bit too optimistic? Yeah, maybe so. Well, while Deutsche Bank appears to be following in the footsteps of Lehman Brothers, a comparison to Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac may be more accurate. And so far, the German government has denied any plans to bail out the Deutsche Bank. So maybe that's why they are repatriating the gold back from the U.S., back to Germany, to bolster up Deutsche Bank. And now you know the rest of the story. Well, you know, we've always said about cryptos, the cryptocurrencies, be very careful when you go ahead and invest in cryptocurrencies. Because, according to an article that was in Zero Hedge this week, cryptos tumble after South Korea's BitThumb exchange was hacked. And the headlines from South Korea's Yonhap, Y-O-N-H-A-P news agency confirmed that BitThumb's crypto exchange has been hacked and 35 billion won, around $30 million, has been stolen. And BitThumb's official Twitter account confirms the temporary suspension of the withdrawals, notes, and they also note that all assets have been moved to cold storage and confirmed that the losses will be covered. Will they? Who knows? But we've had a lot of hacking going on with cryptocurrencies. My advice for what it is worth, and you use your own judgment, get out of cryptocurrencies. It's a huge bet. It can go up or it can go down. You can get burned very badly in cryptocurrencies, especially if somebody hacks your account. Well, you take a look at what Russia's been doing lately, and Arkady Savitsky, S-A-V-I-T-S-K-Y, and writes for the Strategic Culture Foundation, and he says, de-dollarization escalates. Russia sells off record amount of U.S. Treasury bonds. That's going to be important for us, because as the bonds are sold off, then the Federal Reserve has to buy them up, and they have to pay things out. Hey, that means gold. Well, the U.S. Treasury Department report for April, published on June 15th, revealed that Russia sold $47.4 billion out of the $96.1 billion it had in Treasury bonds, or the T-bonds. And in March, Moscow cut its Treasury holdings to $1.6 billion. In February, it reduced its bond portfolio by $9.3 billion. Other holders did it too. Japan sold off $12 billion and China liquidated roughly $7 billion and Ireland ditched over $17 billion. And the trade wars unleashed by Washington stirred fears that financial markets may be in for a rough ride, with American treasuries dumped by some partners, including such major holders as China and Japan, each holding over $1 trillion in bonds. This is bad news and ominous warnings for Washington. The foreign demand is critical to offset the expected surge in federal borrowing needs. The Treasury Department needs to finance the huge spending bill along with tax cuts that were passed by Congress in December of 2017. And it plans to auction off around $1.4 trillion in treasuries this year, with a glut of sellers and a shortage of buyers in the bond market, and the government plans to add $600 billion also. Are we in trouble? What do you think, Ira?
I think that it's a big possibility, yes. Man, I'll tell you, when it comes to this kind of stuff, it again goes right back to what we were talking about earlier. Prepare, have yourself ready, because you never know what's going to happen. I mean, we don't know from day to day waking up whether or not the banks are going to start foreclosing, whether or not they're going to be closing themselves down. I mean, we have just down the road, they're building another new bank branch across the street from another bank branch, right? So at this point in time, maybe the economy is doing well. I mean, if banks are still building their buildings, you know, still building branches, maybe that's a sign that the economy is okay, you know, because they're the ones that are watching it the most, right? So if they're thinking, well, we can afford to open up another new branch here, then that might be an indicator that things are at least reasonable at this moment in time. But there's also the idea of, okay, let's open up this branch and then we're going to use it as a tax write-off because it fails or something like that, you know?
Well, you overexpand, and look what happened to Wells Fargo.
Right, exactly.
Closing,
yeah.
You know, a bunch of branches in the Midwest. And when that happens, you know, the bank screwed up somewhere. You take a look at fast food industries, you know, they sense that, oh, we're really doing good in this one market, so let's go ahead and expand. Let's build to 500 stores. Okay, that's fine, but maybe your product doesn't do so well after you've expanded and you put out all that capital investment. And that's a problem. And, you know, nobody knows when they're going to pull the plug on the economy. Nobody knows. And if you're not prepared, you're burned. And don't say that I didn't tell you. I mean, Ira and I have been saying this for how many years? 4? Maybe 5? And when it happens, it happens. And there's not a darn thing you can do about it. And the government's not going to help you out. They might say they are, but do they help out people in Katrina with that hurricane? Not all that well. How about in other areas? Yeah, they come in and help a little bit, but not that much. So you have to be careful. You have to be prepared. You know, put some money aside, long-term foods, a way to store water. Make sure that you have a way to purify water, too. And you take a look at everything that's out there. And I hate reporting bad news. I'd love to say, hey, the economy grew to 6% this year because of some of the stuff that they've done. It's probably not going to happen. I mean, the most we can get is 3.84%, maybe. And that's better than what we had the last 8 years. So, you know, we'll have to see. But if you're not prepared or you're not preparing, you better start, because things are going to happen. We could have another bad recession. And they always say, I believe recessions happen just about every 7 or 8 years, especially when they change administrations. Yeah, there's always, and it may be a big one or a little one. On the other hand, we could end up with something like the Great Depression. And people have been saying, hey, guess what? The next depression is going to be worse than the Great Depression. So that would make it the Great, Great Depression. Well, hey, we have a section on depression living at moneyandchange.weebly.com. Go to that page. There are videos there about depression cooking and how people lived during the Depression, the Great Depression. So you want to check that out. Also with banks, I mean, gee, you take a look at some of the articles coming out. Reuters, Lisa Lambert and Jonathan Stempel had one. Bank of America's Merrill admits misleading customers to pay a $42 million SEC fine, Securities and Exchange Commission fine. Hey, why don't the banks learn? You had the problems with Wells Fargo, and now you get, you know, Merrill, which is, you know, we used to know it as Merrill Lynch, but it's Bank of America's Merrill section. And then Wells Fargo receives a final approval to settle a $140 million lawsuit, according to Reuters. The Wells Fargo and company said Friday it received final approval from a district court in California to settle a $142 million class action suit, which compensates customers affected by sales scandals related to phony bank accounts. We talked about that before. I mean, if people were honest and forthright, we wouldn't have this problem. But no, the banks decide, okay, I'm going to see how I can get more money. Now, a lot of us think that way. But then they do little devious things to take your money. And they open up accounts that you don't even know you had. And they run them for a little bit and then close them. Then they open up something else and close it. I mean, you have to be notified when a bank opens an account in your name. So you better check into that. And if you go to moneyandchange.weebly.com, you can take a look at the National Debt Clock. And also, you can go to bankrate.com. We have buttons there that you can get and find out if your bank is properly operating. There's also Citigroup. I mean, this is all starting to come out. Citigroup to pay $100 million to settle a U.S. LIBOR rigging probe, according to Jonathan Stempel at Reuters in New York. And in his report, he said Citigroup Incorporated agreed to pay $100 million to settle charges by most U.S. states that it defrauded government and nonprofit entities by manipulating LIBOR and interest rate benchmark that underlies a wide range of consumer transactions. I don't know about you. I don't have $100 million in my pocket. So where's the $100 million going to come out of? I bet you they're customers. Check your bank account for increased fees. It's kind of scary out there, people. It really is. You have to make sure that your bank is a good bank. If they're overexpanding, you know, I heard a report a couple of days ago that Fifth Third Bank is going to be readjusting employees, which means they're going to be laying off some in unprofitable locations, so probably close some banks. They've overexpanded. And sometimes this happens, but man, you have to wonder, is my money safe in the bank where I'm at? Or do I want to put it in a credit union? Or do I want to put it in a farm bank? Just how safe is my local bank if it's not a 4-star or a 5-star bank according to Bankrate? Then I would look at finding another bank or credit union or land bank or farm banks. But the large banks have been screwing up so much, Ira, it's a wonder that they haven't gone to jail.
I know, that's exactly it. You know, you take a look at the people that have done all these different manipulations of the markets and everything, and they not only get away with it, they get actually praised. Oh, what a great businessman! What a great person! We need to idolize this person and look up to them. And oh yeah, kids, watch what this guy does. You know, and yet they're totally destroying economies.
And you know what's. What gets me is then you get politicians involved. I mean, everything's kind of intertwined, you know, the deep state. Everything is kind of intertwined. And you have different rules. Remember when we had the big debacle back in 2007, 2008? And then Congress, in their ultimate poor wisdom, came out with the Dodd-Frank rule, which is some 2,000 pages long. And it actually replaced the Glass-Steagall Act. Basically, Glass-Steagall was saying, hey, you can't invest other people's money in speculative situations. Now they want to take a look at the Volcker fix, V-O-L-C-K-E-R. Paul Volcker used to be head of the Treasury, I believe, or head of the FDIC. And of all the problems. And it's scary. We don't need a lot of regulations on how banks should act other than banks shall not cheat their customers. Banks will not bet customers or investors' money. They have to be called an investment bank to do that. And even then, that's risky. And they can't have derivatives and hedge funds. Then you can say, okay, now you have to balance your sheets, make sure that everything is within the FDIC rules and regs. That's fine. Or you could do away with the FDIC and just go with the National Treasury and put everything under a federal rule. That would make a lot of banks cringe at that one. But I'll tell you what, the Volcker Act it's going to tinker with rules and mess things up. The Dodd-Frank is still not a really good fix for anything. It just complicates things. It doesn't punish banks that do unscrupulous things to their customers. And that needs to happen. Now, the Glass-Steagall Act, it's known as the Banking Act of 1933. And that was 48 Statute 162. And it was passed by Congress in 1933 and prohibits commercial banks from engaging in the investment business. because that's what happened in the Great Depression, and we're kind of repeating it now. And they prevented the commercial Federal Reserve member banks from dealing in non-government securities for customers, and it was enacted as an emergency response to the failure of nearly 5,000 banks during the Great Depression. It worked and it didn't work. It caused a few problems out of it. But at least nobody could invest in hedge funds and derivatives because you weren't that type of a bank. Well, you're going to have other acts coming in. One, in 1999, Congress repealed the GSA with the establishment of the Graham-Leach-Bliley Act, that's B-L-I-L-E-Y, which eliminated the Glass-Steagall Act restrictions against affiliations between commercial and investment banks. And it allows banks to provide a broader range of services, including underwriting and other dealing activities. But the banks need to be under more control, not less. I don't want the bank doing things with my money that could be considered illegal. And if I think that my bank is not doing what they should do, oh yeah, I'll pull my money out. I'll pull my money out and put it someplace else. And a credit union is one thing I would consider. But it's up to you. You have to do your own research, just like our disclaimer. You want to use your own research at your own risk. And I can only tell you what I personally would do, and what I would do wouldn't be something that maybe you would do. And you take a look at Medicare and Social Security. I guess Congress just dipped into it again.
They tried. Did they actually go through with it? I think that the measure that they were doing actually failed to go through, but they were trying to do it.
Hopefully it did. Because according to an article in Zero Hedge, they said Medicare will be insolvent in 2026, sooner than expected. Social Security to follow in 2034. And it says Medicare's trust fund is just 8 more years of solvency until 2026, and Social Security will be exhausted in 2034, according to Thursday projections by the trustees for government programs. And while Social Security's expected depletion is unchanged from last year's projection, the date for Medicare's demise was moved up 3 years. And, you know, if they're allowed to expire, beneficiaries would face an immediate reduction of around 20% in benefits. Are you prepared for that? Well, the cost of Medicare and Social Security will increase substantially as a percentage of the gross domestic product through 2035 due to a sharp rise in beneficiaries as baby boomers retire and lower birth rates that have persisted since the baby boom, resulting in slower growth of the labor force and GDP, or the gross domestic product. Social Security's annual cost as a percentage of GDP is projected to increase from 4.9% in 2018 to about 6.1% in 2038, and then decline to 5.9% by 2052, before generally raising to 6.1% by 2092. I love all these guesstimates. And you know, over 62 million retirees, disabled workers, spouses, and surviving children are tapping into Social Security benefits with an average monthly benefit of $1,294 for all beneficiaries. Medicare, meanwhile, according to the report, provides health insurance to around 60 million people, most of whom are over the age of 65. And I'm one of them. The revised date for Medicare's demise raises the chance for a major fiscal battle facing Congress. And you know, over a long time frame of 75 years, the hypothetical combined Social Security Trust Fund faces a shortfall of about $13.2 trillion, which is up from $12.5 trillion last year, and that was according to the Washington Examiner. It's scary. And if the politicians hadn't gotten into the Social Security Fund, we would have been fine. But thanks to Lyndon Baines Johnson, he started dipping into that to pay for the Vietnam War. And other presidents have done the same. They keep taking from something that we've all paid into. And what do? They give us IOUs. It stinks. Make the government pay us back our money. Write your congressman, write your senator and say, hey, we want our money back. You guys aren't doing anything in Washington, D.C. I want my money back. But that's just my opinion. It's not your opinion. And if it is your opinion, well, do your research. There was an article out by Riley Griffin at Bloomberg.com about Americans are still not saving despite the booming economy. And despite recent job gains, rising wages, and falling unemployment, almost a quarter of Americans said they still have no emergency savings, according to an annual Bankrate.com report that was released this last Wednesday. And the number of Americans who said they have no money readily available in either a checking, savings, or money market account fell to a seven-year low of 23%, down from 24% last year, the study found. And the poll was conducted in June by a research firm called SSRS, using a national sample of about 1,006 people. Well, I would say 1,006 is a very small sample. But it still points to one thing. People aren't saving money. And if they're not saving money, maybe that's because they are in debt. The old credit card is eating up everything that they do. Maybe we have hidden inflation. You know, go to the grocery store and check out your prices. Buy from the outer aisles only. And that's the meat area, the dairy, eggs, cheese, and all that. The stuff on the inside, hey, that's where the stores are making their money. But you want to check things out, because I'll tell you what, something is not right with the American economy. The numbers look good. A lot of people are working more. But, you know, it's like the report said, lower income households are more likely to have no emergency savings, but 27% of the lowest income households have accumulated enough savings to cover at least 3 months' expenses, suggesting that savings is not a function of income. In fact, one in four of the highest income households either have no emergency savings or just enough to cover fewer than 3 months' expenses. 30% of younger boomers, those aged 54 to 63, have no emergency savings, more than any other generation. As you'd expect, they are at least likely to feel comfortable with their savings. Well, and then you got millennials. And on the other hand, they were the most likely to feel very uncomfortable with their emergency savings because they probably don't have any. The Northeast has the highest percentage of Americans who claim to have enough saved to cover 6 months of bills. And the South has the lowest percentage. Pay back your bills. You know, pay them off as much as you can. Put some money aside. We've been talking about that for years. Well, if you're living in Chicago, there was an article by Mark Glennon at wirepoints.com. And Chicago taxpayers are facing a $224 million bill for the Obama Center to be built on Chicago's south side. So you got that to put up with. And you know, Ira, I think we're running out of time.
We're kind of getting there.
All
yeah.
gone.
We're getting there.
I know we're getting there. It's so much stuff. You know, I mean, we could probably sit back and talk for at least a couple of hours on everything presented in the show, literally. And you take a look at the people in Chicago. Aren't they paying high taxes enough?
It's outrageous.
And here they're
going to
get stuck with $224 million and not the $172 million that they initially reported. So everything's going to go up. You know, I think there ought to be a law that the presidents, when they leave, have to build their own library at their own expense and not charge taxpayers. I think that that is what needs to be done. Why have all of these libraries with federal funds? Let them be privately financed and built. I mean, who knows how much money in the Clinton Foundation was funneled into the Clinton Library? Who knows? You just have to check into that. Well, now we're going to get into something a little bit more morbid. You know, we don't really get into morbid stuff here on the show. But according to Chris Taylor at Reuters, he wrote an article on plan ahead in your will for your virtual self. And we've got that posted at moneyandchange.weebly.com. It's there. It's called Planning Ahead. And he said, in the not-so-olden days of a few years ago, relatives might have sifted through stacks of documents to sort out your affairs after you died. And these days, much of your presence in this world is floating around in the cloud, email, online drive, social media. Even your financial accounts are probably paperless at this point. And to give your family access to your accounts after you die, you need to do some work in advance, leaving instructions in your will for everything from access to your Facebook page to how to redeem your cryptocurrency. Most estate plans are silent on all this stuff, and that's a big problem. And that was according to Kevin Ruth, R-U-T-H, head of wealth planning and personal trust for Boston-based Fidelity Investments. Well, here's a few tips. Write everything down. Passwords and logins may be all in your head, but they're not in anybody else's. So do a full accounting of everywhere you might be digitally. Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, bank accounts, 401ks, Bitcoin exchanges, and document how to get access. Well, the importance of this hit Houston financial planner Ashley Foster like a sledgehammer about 3 years ago. The 33-year-old had a close friend from high school who was struck down by an aggressive colon cancer, and he watched helplessly as the family struggled to get access to all of his friend's accounts. And Foster took action to get his own digital life together, documenting logins and passwords, putting them in a safe deposit box, and giving instructions to loved ones on how they would access that. You also want to appoint a digital executor. And, you know, in a traditional will, you name certain people to handle affairs if you pass away or you're incapacitated. The same goes for digital property, and this could very well be a different person than the one that's handling your financial or health care directives. Call it a power of attorney for digital. If you're drafting a will now, make sure you include these digital issues with the help of an estate planning attorney. And if you have an existing will that was drawn up in the past, you may need to update it. Almost nobody was dealing with these issues 10 years ago. Think about your wishes. Would you prefer that your accounts be deleted altogether? Or do you want them to stay up indefinitely as a memorial? These are the kinds of decisions that you can make now. And on Facebook, you can designate a legacy contact who can handle some functions of your account, but not all, such as seeing private messages. Don't be cryptic about crypto. Imagine you're a Bitcoin millionaire who passes away unexpectedly, and it can be like losing a winning lottery ticket. And sometimes people know that their loved ones own Bitcoin, but they have no idea where it was purchased or how to access it, says Fidelity's Ruth. And we could be talking about a significant amount of money. And Bitcoins come with a private key or a secret number that allows currency to be accessed and transferred. Bitcoin exchanges, for their part, have their own usernames and passcodes on top of that. and leave all this information behind. You want to do that, or your crypto bonanza could be gone forever. And that's what you have to do. There's a lot of stuff that's going on right now. And if you're not planning ahead, you're in trouble. You are in trouble. Take a look at the preparedness articles that we have at moneyandchange.weebly.com. 7 Ways to Stay Alive in a Post-Collapse Society. It's a long article. It's got a lot of good points. What's the government doing to protect us from an EMP? Just check it out. I'm trying to help people. And I do this out of the goodness of my heart, Ira. And you know this. I don't charge anything for my services. All I want to do is just help people. And I hope that people donate to the show to keep us on the air. And then hopefully the articles that I present will help you prepare for the unexpected. So if you don't have a will, get a will. You can go to legal.com, I think, or legalzoom.com, one of those, and you could actually do that. You might want to include a digital section in your will. Get your long-term foods. Build it up. Build enough at least for 4 people for 1 year. The Mormons like to do that. You know, a long time ago, they said they wanted a year or two worth of foods, and you rotate them in and out. Now it's down to about a year. Some people only have 6 months, but, you know, they're building. You can have canned goods. You can have preserves. You can do your own canning. There's a lot of things that you can do, but you have to be prepared. And if you're not prepared, you're in trouble. And I'm not all that prepared. I am to a certain degree, but I'm not like a lot of people. Now, I'm probably in the top 30% of people that are prepared. And if something happened tomorrow, hey, I could feed at least 4 people. I have a first aid kit that I can take care of at least 4 people. I have enough sanitation things that I can do to take care of 4 people. Did you ever do a toilet paper inventory, Ira?
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's going to be like gold. It's going to be expensive because if the markets go down, you know, let's say you go to your grocery store around here, it's Kroger's or Wally World. And they get a delivery every day or every 3 days, depending. And people can clean out a store, if not overnight, at least within 3 days. And if you don't have a delivery coming in, within 3 days, there's nothing in the store. Look at the people down in Florida. You know, when a hurricane comes in, everything gets cleaned out. Water, batteries, you name it. Toilet paper is one of those things. You got to have it. It's a fact of life. Do an inventory of what you have in toilet paper. What you have in clean wipes and hand sanitation, bleach. I mean, there's a long list, but check that out. Well, Ira, that's all I've got this week. And next week, we'll have some more news from the financial world and the preparedness world. And I wish everybody a good week. And we'll talk to you next week.
Indeed, indeed. Everybody out there, have a great week. Be safe. Have fun. And thank you, as always, for listening. We'll talk to you again soon.
Spending. Spend. I've been spending money with spend. Spending. We spent too much to spend. Spend a little more spending.